Name of the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit, amen. Today is the 8th month, the 13th day of the year 2023, and it's the 11th Lord's Day after Pentecost, which the Lord hath made.
Let us be glad and rejoice in
it. And it's the feast day of Saints Hippolytus and Cassian. All right, now, like you said about TJ's letter there, it was excellent. But that whole, you know, it's amazing what you catch with a lot of these people, as we're talking about, you know who we're talking about here, and the other guy. The thing that's really bad is this thing lifted up?
It looks good on there.
It does, okay. They're like bipolar, yeah. You know? Like, it's spiritual bipolarity.
Yeah.
Polarity. Oh, I hate my family. I can't stand my family. They're a pain in the ass. Oh, my family. How could God send them to hell for thine? My family, and they're always talking about their family. So they lying to you, is what I'm telling you. Is, you know when a guy has to say it too many times? It's like, all right, you're overdoing it. You know, you're trying to convince yourself that you really don't love your family more than God, but every time it happens, they do. That's the worst part, because they lie to you. Now, if someone just told you that, you would believe them, but when they keep saying it, and then all of a sudden they bounce back. Oh, my family. Oh, how could God let this one die over here? Oh, they're coming over here. Oh, they just yelled at me. So they're shown at the same time on the other side an affection for their family, an over-affection, an idolization. But they flip. But you know what's amazing? In this pagan world, and even if you think you had a good family, which there is no such thing, unless it's Catholic, there might be on the natural law some families that are better, but every family is like that when you think about it. One week they're happy with their parents, the next week they're angry with their parents. One week you're angry at your brother because he did something, the next week he's angry at you, then you're both angry at your sisters, then your sister's angry at the brothers, then one sister or one brother's angry with the one brother and the one sister, then the one sister and the one brother's angry with the other brother and the other sister, so, and then the next minute they love him again. So it's really, that's the way the world is like that. One minute they say they love their family because everything's going good, then the next minute they don't like their family. Then they like them again, then they don't like them again. Then they like them again, and then they don't like them again. It's crazy. The up, the downs. When you don't have God, that's the way it is. All these little jealousies and spites and envies. So even within their own families, they can see there's this contradiction, you know? But if you're supposed to be a man of God and you really put God first, how could you let these people affect you? If you're living with them, you can't help it. So it's a persecution. Offer it up. God allows that to happen to try your faith and to have you gain penance. I was telling one of the other site members, too, that a lot of times God doesn't really liberate you right away. He makes you stay where you are to pay for your past sins. It's penance. And you got to thank God for that. I told you guys a million stories. I lived in a rooming house, I told you that, like which was the size of like one little room, and you couldn't have a refrigerator, you couldn't have a stove. You had to share the bathroom with four guys on the first floor. And it was like $400 a month just for a little rooming house. But I didn't mind. I mean, sharing the bathroom, it's not a big deal. But the big deal is this. You're living four other guys, right? So there's one guy who's next to me. And you're not supposed to have guests. So he had a guest in there. And they were playing like this loud, loud evil rock music with curse words.
Oh, man.
And I'm right next to him, right? And this is when I just coming out of the monastery. You know, you want holiness of God. And I'm trying to pray the divine office, yeah. And I'm going, oh my God, I can't take this.
Yeah.
Hell, man, I can't take, how long is this going to, then I thought about my past sins. When I listened to that kind of music, and when we had this one kid, and we were living in the Catholic University in America, this kid Juan from Argentina, and he was kind of a good, a natural plan. He lived right next to us, but we used to blast our rock music, and he would be knocking on the wall,
yeah.
And we never listened to him.
No.
And we would play our music.
Yeah.
And it came to my mind, and God said, see, Richard, you're getting what you gave him.
Yeah.
See, God will forgive your sins, but that doesn't mean you're not going to pay for them. He's still going to punish you for them. Punishment for due to sins expiates, it prevents you from falling to sin again, shows you that you're supposed to be punished, gives glory to God, and shows that what you did was not right. I'm going to forgive you, but if you don't punish, then it's almost like you didn't sin. So if I did something, and God, I forgive you, but there's no punishment, it's not like you really did anything bad at all. There's always a consequence when you do bad, because God is just.
Well, God says, he has to chastise you more.
He does. Never. Yeah, absolutely. We just talked the individual I told you about, Hebrews 12:6, whom the Lord loveth, he chastises. He scourges every son whom he receiveth. If you be that chastisement, your bastards are not sons. Remember that one thing in King David, when his sons are rebelling against him, all that, and his Absalom got killed, he said, do you think that when God starts to punish you, he'll ever stop? King David said that. Do you think that when God starts to punish you, he will ever stop? Well, it goes to show you, sin is still odious to God. And yes, your sin is forgiven and remitted during the New Covenant era, but you're going to be punished. Punishment, it's got to go for the glory of God, too, to make reparation because of what you did against the commandments. Then it also is a preventative from falling into the sin again. And it's in God's justice. So I'm just giving some of you people an example. These younger guys, people are first coming in, and they've been in the world. Well, you're not going to get out of the world that easy. You're going to get out of it. I mean, if I was out of it. This happened to me, and I was with the Diamond Heads, and I left. Now I'm back out in the world again, and then I'm living in this rooming house. And I'm used to this, you know, the sign, and that this is all happening. And then God delivered me from it. It only happened a couple of times. I told the guy who owns the place and all that, and I told the kid himself. And finally, he would get drunk over there and all. And so finally, you know, it didn't last too many nights. And then what happened when I was praying, about only 1 week, the guy moved me across the hall in another room that wasn't right next to his. And at the same time, he wasn't even playing his music. So it lasted for a while. But a couple week maybe, and I'm going, I can't pray in this room. I can't pray when that's going on. I can't even think. But, so, I told all these people that are stuck in positions where they can't get out, and they're with non-Catholic rooms and all that, in a position sort of like that, you've got bad neighbors. You got to be persevere and be patient, but always look for a way out. And ask God to deliver you. And eventually he will. And so realize, first of all, there's another thing that's going on here. And this is going to help all these brothers. That are a lot of times you're looking for a place and you think it's the place you want. But God's got a better place. He always said that. If you don't get it and you tried your best, then don't worry about it. That means God's got something else in mind for you and it's going to be better. So just wait. I'll give you a couple examples. For instance, if you got a place that was really nice but it was $800 a month, God sees he can get you another place for $600 or $400 a month that's equally nice and it's less money. Or things like that, you know. Or maybe he sees that $800 a place, there's a bad neighbor. But God has his reasons. But the main thing I tell him is keep looking. Don't ever, like St. Augustine say, he said, work as if everything depends on you. Pray as if everything depends on God. So you always put your faith in God, but don't. But offer up what you're going through when you're living with your non-Catholic family members as a penance and a suffering. Now, some of these people that live in Nero's household and slaves, they couldn't even get out ever. They were stuck living with these bastards their whole life while they were hiding their Christianity. And sometimes some didn't have to hide it, but if they professed it, they were treated very cruelly. But that was part of the persecution. You got to offer it up. But believe me, God always gives you grace for grace. So that if you bear it patiently, you come out of it strong. And you see that. After every tribulation, there's a reward from God if you bear it and you win it. But I look back at my life, I didn't get anything that, I mean, it took a while. First I was living in, when I first got out of the monastery, I was living with this other guy I knew, and it was a senior citizen home. And he had an apartment, 2-3-room apartment, and he put me up in his apartment. I wasn't supposed to be staying there more than like a couple of weeks. I was there for like 6 months or 4 months, I forget how long. But I was sleeping on the couch, and they put me up. But then he couldn't keep me there no longer because the regulations and all that. So then I had to go into a rooming house in Pequannock, New Jersey, right around the corner from that Our Lady Guadalupe Chapel that Father William Ashley took over. And it was under the control of, I forget who, Wickens first, and then Ashley took it over. But, and then, so here I am, no refrigerator, no stove, so you got to buy foods that you don't need to refrigerate and stuff and all that, you know, and... Then I had to go out and get a job again because to pay for the $400 a month just for a little stinking room. I got a whole piece of property over there which I pay utility, and that maybe $100 a month. And I got a whole piece of property, three built. I mean, it's crazy. I like the one guy I was talking to in England, and it's not just England. He says they make it impossible for a single person to make enough money unless you're like college educated diplomas and you have all these fancy jobs, a regular blue collar work or something. I mean, it makes it very difficult for you to live. Because then you also have, if you have a car, you got to pay the insurance. And if you're young, the insurance is like skyrocket. They want you to have, they want two people to have a two-house income. That's why they have the woman to work. They did that on purpose. What one man used to make for the whole house, they split it in half. Now the woman's got to go out. Now that's got her leaving the house just so they can make ends meet. And the kids have, now you got the kids go to daycare center and you're spending sign-up money for a daycare center. It split the whole family apart. You can see the plot of the devil and what he's doing here. But my point is that if you're serving God faithfully, he'll find you a place. It's not going to be a palace, maybe. I mean, when Will first moved down here, and all of us, but I'll give you that, Will, and he drove straight across country, right through Chicago. He didn't even stop off at his parents' home. He was going to. He said, no, I ain't going to stop. He went like from, where'd you start? Kirby's in Pennsylvania?
Pennsylvania.
And you went, yeah.
Like, I ran outside of Pittsburgh, Allegheny.
And he went from Pittsburgh, and he was going to go to his parents. He said, I ain't stopping on my parents. And he came, he was living in a caboose.
Yeah.
I mean a caboose. I could show you the thing. I mean how small it was. And when you saw the RV I was living in, which was like maybe a little bigger than your caboose,
yeah.
And Ron had a little bit of a bigger place. So, okay, that's what we're going through. That's what I'm living through years. I loved it, though. I told one of the other brothers in Brazil, too, he's got a nice little, it's a nice cell. It's big enough for you, if you had a wife, you could have two people in there, you know. But it's like a little cell. And what's good about small places, as long as you don't have a lot of people, one person or two if you're married or something, or one, it's easy to clean. It's easy. It's all you need. You got enough room for a stove, refrigerator, bed. I used to have a folding bed, too. So when I was done sleeping, I'd fold it up, and you got more room. And down here, we could just get a futon, which is a couch and a bed. So you just turn it down to a bed, bring it up to a couch. All fits in one little room. Easy to clean. You don't need anything more. Tables to read your Bible, to put your computer on, to speak and to pray, a little altar. And you'll find out, if you ever had a big place, you wouldn't know what to do with it. Now, the only reason I needed a big place eventually was because I got a lot of books. I got storage. I print stuff. I do DVD. So that's when we brought that property. It's a long story, but we got that property over there, Ron got. And the house, it's like piece of junk, to put it quite honestly. It's a shack. They can condemn this place, really. I mean, the shack, it's everything.
It's the kind that the big bad wolf can blow over.
Yeah, exactly. But I store stuff in it. I got so many books. I store and I eat. So I needed eventually, and my prayer too, when I was, because I was only living in this small space, was I need to get a bigger place, Lord. And another, I'm just as good for all these brothers out there. When we were living on that RV property, and he had his caboose, and we'll tell you, I had a small place, and he had small refrigerators in that worked by propane. They're not big. So I said, we could use a bigger refrigerator because we would get meats on sale. We would go in the garbage. Ron knew how to go through the garbage and pick out food from the supermarkets. That was still good. And he was an expert at this, Ron. I mean, he was a true father to me, Ron, in a real sense. My other father, they were rich, had a lot of money. He knew how to rough it. But what we were praying was, could you get meats on sale and all that? And we were praying, Lord, I sure could use a refrigerator. Then, like within that week, somebody was thrown out a refrigerator behind us. It was in the garbage. And we said, wonder if it works. I don't know, let's get it. So we got it, we plugged it in, and it worked for free. So we plugged it in on the outside of our RVs, and that was our refrigerator where we stored our stuff. I'm just giving the brothers and the inquirers that are coming into the church what to, don't expect that you're going to, and also when you're looking for places, don't think you're going to move into a palace. Now, it would be ideal, like when I moved in with Ron, because when we got the place over here, with Ron, we split the fee, which made it a lot easier. But even then, it was so inexpensive. But if you're living with, I mean, compared to, I'm paying $400 a month for a rooming house, now I got a whole, when I was living with Ron over there, it was costing me $50 to $60 a month to live. I had like a half acre of land, or a quarter acre, half acre of land. I had my RV. He had his RV, and we had the house. $50-$60 a month. And you had stoves, refrigerators, and everything. That includes utilities and everything. So, but you got to look for places where that can happen. Now, I know if you're living in big cities, forget it. I was in New Jersey. That's what I'm telling you. The rooming house alone was just $400. And then I had to go back out to work again as an optician. I mean, but it was way better to work as an optician than stay in the Diamond Head Monastery with that lying, hypocritical, dirty bastard. This is after I left the monastery. You know? I was staying there because I wanted the peace of a monastery. I don't want to go in the world. And it was condemning me. It's a false peace, you understand? Jerry Madistick said something right, even though he's still wrong, this kid. He's still got big problems, but he did make, somebody did give him some advice. He says, I got bills to pay, I got family. And he says, so he was working as in a university as a professor at the Society of St. Peter's professor. He got a job there. So he said, well, I got to make money. He said, well, if you got to compromise your faith to make money, why don't you just go out and get a job, a regular job, like everyone else does, and you don't have to worry about compromising your faith. Something that now he's supported by people sending money or whatever. But there is what I was saying up there, you're in a monastery and you're going, it's peaceful. I got all the time to, I did all my writing and studying, so I had a lot of time to do all that. Even though the kid was a kook, he was never going to let me speak again, which he didn't tell me in the beginning. It was obvious as time went on that I'm never going to speak again after that second coming of Jesus Christ. That was the end of it. But that was clear later on. But I'm doing all my writings, it was peaceful. The kid, he was like in another world, La La Land. You know, I ran the place. I was doing the rules. I was following the rule of Benedict. I loved it. But so you got that peace, right? But it's fake. Because then when you have to start denying the faith, you go, where am I going to go if I don't go here? I mean, we're going to go anywhere but here. Go back out and get a job as an optician rather than stay here and deny the faith. That's what ended up happening. I got a job with a friend of mine named Keith McFarland at, it was called Town Opticians on 35 South Street in New Providence, New Jersey. Which... good. What am I going to, I don't care. Because I'm not going to continue to do this, you know, sins of omission or whatever's going on here. So then I'm praying to God. I says, Lord, please, I don't want to go back out into the world. I'll go into a mountain in a cave and you can feed me in that cave. And I don't ever want to see a human being again in my whole life, ever. I'll continue to write. I'll continue to do this. I'll give it to someone. I don't want to see humans anymore. I just want to go. That's really what I wanted. But that's not what God wanted for me, obviously. But that's really what I, because you're used to that. But I'm just showing you the delusion. Even if the hermit life is a delusion, I'm thinking I want to go there, right? And that's kind of a cop out too, because you're not made to do that. You're made to preach. You're made to go out and teach people. But what happened was, I called Chicago, even told him about it. Maybe I can go over there. And then I said, and Chicago called me or see if I found out what was going on. And I said, he said, well, why don't you come out here? We'll put you up. I'll make you a priest and all that. And I asked him about the Salvation Dogma, and then which he denies. And then about, oh, you know, John Paul II. You know, he's brother Mike doesn't want to say he's apostate Pope. He says, well, we can't make people believe that's our opinion. We can't say that for sure. Chicago told me this. I went, after all your writings, and you call the guy. He said, well, that's our opinion. We can't bind people to it. I went, what? That's your opinion? Well, that's pretty scary. I mean, that better be based on more than an opinion when you start denying the supremacy and the authority of a pope. It better be based on dogmas or real facts about immorality or something. That I said, bye-bye, Chicago. So, then I'm waiting. Where am I going to go? Nothing. I don't know. I got a couple more days. When he says, I'll have one of the guys that was after you. He said, he'll take you wherever you got to go. But you got to be gone by so-and-so. So what happened was I finally contacted this guy in New Jersey, a friend of mine, and he's the guy in the rooming house. And he said, come over here, Rich, I'll put you up in the rooming house. And it was in Wayne, New Jersey. But my friend lived in Philadelphia, so he drove me back to Philly, and then my friend picked me up in Philly and brought me back to him. I was living in a rooming house 4, 5, 6 months. Then I realized, I told you guys a whole story about that stuff, you know. And then... some of the guys got, when I was getting ready to do my strange voices to get all the evidence out there, that's how I know there were spies in the camp. And I definitely think I know who he is, at least one of them, who was put there to keep me at bay. Because when I was finally ready to do my strange voices at the other friend's house in New Jersey, Patterson, New Jersey, they found out I was getting ready to do it. They went, Rich, we can't help you no more. You've been out for about a year or so now. Nobody's coming. And then all the time we were at the table, and we would always talk about, where can we go? Where can we go? And we all agreed there was nobody. We talked about Vizelis. We talked about McKenna. We talked about Jardinia. We knew about all the, and we said they're all bums. None of them hold a Salvation Dogma. And we all knew that. And this was the weirdest thing about that whole thing. When I finally was getting ready to do the Strange Voices Part 1 and 2, which I promised I was going to do, then all of a sudden, that's it. They clammed up, The one friend of mine says, no, Rich, I don't want you doing it in my house. I said, why? Are you afraid that they're going to find out it's your house and they're going to come after you? I says, I'm going to tell them where you are. I'm not going to give them, I won't even tell them your name. I won't even tell your address. Nope. I don't want to take the chance. I went, what the heck? It was like a giant stab in the back. And then at the same time, when this was happening, I already moved out of the out of a senior citizen place because I can only stay there so long. I'm in the rooming house when this is going on in Pequannock. And I'm getting ready to do, not going. Can't help you. The way it happened was, I was in a rooming house, and everything was getting ready, and my friend knocks on the door, ex-friend, he's dead now and in hell, presumed in hell, knocks on the door and says, Rich, we can't help you. I don't want you doing it in my place, like I just said. And he said, can't you find some place to go, like a monastery? I said, wait a second. I said, isn't, I forget his name. Yeah, Lou. I said, wait a second, Lou. We've been talking all these years about there's nobody. That's why we stay home. I said, tell me where I can go. Tell me where I can go where somebody's not denying a dogma or something. Well, I don't know. Isn't anybody there? You know there's nobody out there. So they cut me off. It was like, get away from them. That because they didn't want me to put that video. And I'm not saying it was this guy, Lou. I definitely think I know who it is, too. But you have handlers. And so everything was okay. I can talk all I want in private, but the minute I'm getting ready to do videos, bang, no! They close the door on you. And so this is what I'm... So then I try to do the video myself. Now, the only friend that stayed fed with me was my friend Hank Sanati. And this was he was a Bronx homicide detective. He was involved in the Son of Sam case, big. If you look up his name, Hank Sanati, Son of Sam, he was really big involved in that. And he's still alive, I pray for him. But he's the only one that's stayed working with me. And it was interesting with the whole thing about Son of Sam. And he told me, he said, he was the first one that said, this is not just one man. This is a satanic cult. And he found out about, and he was, because he's nominal Catholic now, but we thought we were all Catholic at that time. But if you got the whole story about the Son of Sam, he was like the lead detective on that. And he told, when he got the evidence that this was satanic and it was a satanic cult, he said, all the detectives that were in, he says, I only want the Catholic detectives to stay in here. I want the rest to leave. And he said, you believe in the devil? Do you believe in God and the devil? Yeah, he said, this is satanic. And he told me the stuff that happened. He would sit on, there was like a pentagram where each person would be on one point of the stars, and the person and the devil would come up in the middle. And if you move off one of those points, he would kill you. But he had all this stuff about what was going on. Later on, it turned out that it was true what he was saying. But they suspended him because it goes up high. He's saying guys on the Mets, politicians, were all involved in a satanic cult. And he had the information. So what did they do? They suspended him from the Bronx detective, and the FBI came after him, and they persecuted him. But anyway, this is the guy that's helping me, right? And he comes in, and he says, Rich, I got like a video camera. And maybe you can use it with an old video camera. And he says, that's the most I can give you. I don't know what else I can do. I'll give you this video camera. And you got... So then I'm trying. I wish I saved this. You guys would get a kick out of this. Yeah. So in my little rooming house, and I'm trying to do my own filming. So I'm setting the camera up. I got to look at it over here. I got to click the camera. Then I'm going over here. And I'm talking. Then I go to check if it's coming in. Then this thing falls down. That pulls out. Then I'm trying to put this up, and it's just not working. I'm going, oh. I said, this is difficult. You know, now, what happens, see, I'm in this room, every day I'd still wake up and read my scriptures and do them. I never stopped writing. I was always just writing and studying through all of this. But now I'm finding it like, I can't get this thing done by myself. I need somebody to hold the camera for me. One other person! So, then enters this other friend I had, ex-friend, he's in northern New Mexico. I won't give his name now. I pray for him. I hope he comes to his senses. But he's the one that really got me out of there, though. And he knew me from when I was in the monastery, and he tracked me down in the rooming house, and he called me up. And he said, oh, this is not right what they're doing to you and all that. He says, why don't you come out and visit me in New Mexico? So he says, this one woman wants to pay for your ticket. And this other woman, which I won't mention, lives in the Midwest, she followed my stuff too. And they wanted me to continue, and not just a few people wanted me to go out there and do this strange voices and keep talking. So their plan was to get me to visit out into northern New Mexico, see how it goes, and then if it goes good, to move out there. So I took a plane flight out there that one woman paid for, and I went out there, I met him, and it went good, and he says, move out here with me, up in northern New Mexico, in Chimayo. I used to call it Chimayo. It's not Chimayo, it's Chimayo. They have their way of talking. Chimayo. It's a beautiful place, by the way. Northern New Mexico is even better than down here.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. I mean, if you look, I mean, it's, they had the Santuario there and all that. At one time, it was a very holy place, even. So, then I end up taking my car and going cross country. I pack it up. My 19, what was it? The Cutlass Supreme. What was it? 1974 Cutlass Supreme, pale color. Packed it up with stuff. I said, I don't know if this car's going to make it, but I'm going cross country. So I drove across, and I don't like driving at night, so I stop at night. I don't like driving. And so I ended up, I said, on the way out, I want to stop off to visit Father John Martinez, who was in Oklahoma, Frederick, Oklahoma. Everyone knew about him, who knew about the traditional movies, a Mexican priest. Had a lot of good stuff to say. He was really right about Aquinas. Couldn't stand Aquinas. But he was a wacko, too, because even though he held the city of composition, he held the salvation dogma, he would be in religious communion with all these other priests that disagreed with him and held the heresies. He wouldn't like make the separation. He's a weird guy. I didn't find that out until I really actually, even when I visited him, I thought he was okay. It's when we invited him to New Mexico and found out he was praying with Novus Ordos. And I went, what are you doing? We told you to come out here to preach the city of the conscious position and to condemn, tell these people to condemn. And now you're saying mass for them, you're giving them holy. That's a long story about Martinez, Father John Martinez. So, but I visited him in Frederick for about a day or two. And he says, I was waiting for somebody like you to come along. I got all these. He had a lot of good stuff. He did, too, though. He says, I got all my, he had this newsletter. He put it out. I want to give it to somebody. I'm getting old. I can give it to you. I said, yeah. I keep his work on all that. But he turned out to be a disappointment. So I end up coming out up in northern New Mexico. And I'll tell you that story another time, though, what happened there. But because that might be a whole long thing. But what I'm trying to, and I was living with this guy and his family. And at first it was going okay. But what I noticed with a lot of these people, there, and even the Diamond Head, snake, rattlesnake bastard, because I'm one of the witnesses in the Book of the Apocalypse, they're waiting for all these miracles to take place. So, hey, we're going to be famous, man. We're going to be miracles. People are going to be running in here. Well, thank God he didn't give me miracles, you know? Because if that's the only reason that you're going to want to follow me, it's just the miracles, and I didn't have the full deposit of faith yet, well, that's pretty shabby. That's pretty shabby, okay? Because then you're not putting the faith first. Plus, I would have been overwhelmed anyway. Never be able to get the work done. But this is what they're waiting for, miracles. And instead, it was the opposite. Because the more I would preach the truth, more people would leave. I mean, it's like Diamond Brothers, you know? Lost the whole, first week I was there, and I did this, that's when I did the Second Coming speech, that was it. Wiped out the whole congregation. They all left almost down to, maybe just a few of them stayed. That was it. Then he panicked. Where's the miracles? The same thing happened to this guy. He figured maybe Rich comes over with me. Then I went. Then he ended up going down to Michael Reese in Corpus Christi, Texas. Maybe we'll do a trilogy on this whole thing. And next week I'll get more detail on the Felix's. His first name was Felix. On what happened up there. But I guess what I'm trying, the point I'm trying to get across to some of you inquirers and catechumens, and even you members of the church, you faithful, that are living with non-Catholic family members and friends, that are living in difficult situations, that's what you got expected. What I've learned is, you don't get any, there's a trial and a tribulation. But God will, when he delivers you into what even, this was a better situation here, then you get problems there, then you go somewhere else. You always got to be ready to get up and move. Because even if God puts you in a nice place and it's peaceful for a while, it may go bad. So even here, I think this might be our final place, at least to near the end. That's my opinion. That now, and even God said, don't worry about it, you're going to be settled in, and you're going to be in a, I remember I said something like that? You'll be in the right place at the right time. And that's here. Now, but I'm going to just give you an example of what your mentality's got to be. I believe that too, because now, that first of all, I'm in charge. I own everything. Nobody can come in here and try to take over by kicking me out or anything like that. That's the one thing you taught me to do. Do not let anybody take control of your possessions. You have to be the one. That's why the Catholic Church, you know, they're the one that has to own the land, or if someone else is owning it, they can kick you out. So my thought is that we're going to be here probably to the end when the Antichrist arrests us, and maybe there's going to be a persecution where he's going to disrupt this place for a while. But for the sake of the argument, that's just my opinion. I'm always ready, though. God may have them come in here and shut this whole place down, and I got to move to Texas or Uganda or Russia or China, somewhere else, or Hungary. Because whatever God wills. Because right now I know in Texas they're way more conservative than we are up here in New Mexico. But I'm just ready for whatever happens. I can't, you know, you can't, you don't, you're living, right now it's a paradise for us. It is. And when you have your own place, and like this, when you do get your own place, even my rooming house room was paradise for me. It really was. I loved it. It was just me. I loved that. It was paradise. And even so, so you're living good. Okay, but if something goes bad, be willing to, so that's why he said, as my, I think I'm in my reading today even, he was not willing to renounce all that he possesses cannot be my disciple. So you got to be ready to give up everything if you have to save your soul, or persecution, and pick up and move. Well, how many picking up and moving did I do? I went through a lot of these stories, you know, and there's a lot of stops in between I'm not talking about, which I spoke about, and about Glenmont, New York, McKenna, O'Keefe. So basically, when I'm up there with Northern New Mexico, I ended up going to Corpus Christi, Texas. Then I finally ended up coming back to TRC with Brother Ron, Artesian Park, and this was my place to be. And we were in the park in that little thing for a while, then we bought the piece of property here, then we bought the ranch out here, and okay. But my whole thing is, though, and don't be over anxious, because look, some people, like in the early days of the church, they were living in Nero's household and with pagan owners, and they can never leave. They were slaves, and they were Christians. What a suffering that is. But I guarantee you, God gives them the grace to handle it and to be joyful at the same time, which is really weird. So what's the difference? If you die in slavery to a pagan, where you had to hide your faith and got persecuted, you go to heaven. My point is, don't panic thinking that it's a bad sign from God because you're not out, because you can't get out. You haven't found a place yet. But your prayer, of course, is to so God doesn't make it so hard on you. But God doesn't let it get so hard where it overwhelms you. But it gets hard. And a lot of times you'll find that too. When God is starting to prepare to move you out, he's getting a place for you, and that's what happened to me up there, then he gets the persecution even more. Then it gets unbearable. There is a point where it gets either kill me or I'm going to kill you. Something's going to go on here. You die or I die. We don't stay standing in the same house at the end of the day. And when it gets to the point where it gets really bad, and God will do that on purpose a lot of times to get you so ready to move out, so that when he finally gets that thing set up, you're going, man. You can't wait to go. You're just gone. And that would be especially for some people a little timid. They still have an affection for the family members. They still want to stay in the house with them and all that. It doesn't mean you can't visit. Look, it doesn't mean you can't visit them. You can talk to them. If they're of goodwill, you can still visit them. You can talk to them. You get, and all that, depending on how they are. But if it's like my family really bad, I don't even want to visit them. It's a nightmare. I'm not going near them. But sometimes you could, though. I'm not saying, it's not that you can't still visit and talk to them when you're not living with them. And some situations, if the parents are really not bothering you, you can stay there. If they let you do what you want, they're not coming in and persecuting you, and you can practice the faith in your own room, and you can, you know. But yeah, it's nice to be on your own too. All depends on the level of persecution and what's going on. But my point is, sometimes you say, I got to get out. Is why come on, God's not getting me to place right away? But through experience, I say, you will learn that every time you go through a trial and tribulation, there's a great reward at the end of the tunnel. God rewards you with this great peace, and he gives you something even better. Experience teaches you that. And so it teaches you to put up, you do what you could, and then accept what you can't do, sit back and persevere and be patient. Because when God paves the road and really wants something to go, then it just goes, it moves. And I'll give you a couple examples. You should always still keep trying to find a place. But let's say, for the sake of the argument, you gave up. You shouldn't have gave up, but you gave up. You're not even looking anymore. But God wants you to move out. Well, we've done that with certain things, like with the solar panels. When we were first trying to put it up, we didn't have everything together yet, and it wasn't working. It was, what are we going to do? How are we going to do it? I said, forget it for a while. Don't even think about it. But when the time came, it's all laid out. So let's say you're not even looking for a place anymore, and you go to work one day, and one of your buddies at work says, hey, guess what? I got a neighbor. She's got a place that she's renting. I was thinking, you know, you were looking for a place. She's renting it for a good price. And you don't have to go through an agent or nothing. It's a private rental, you know. Yeah. And there you go. And you go up, you talk to her. She goes, oh, fine, boom, but you're in. And then you go, wow. You know, that's the way it works. When God wants to pave the road, he'll eventually open that door. And as far as looking for places, you should always keep trying. But it's also good if you could always have one other person living with you or near you that has the faith, because two are a lot better. Big difference when you have two as opposed to when you're just alone. And I was alone so many times. Like I told you guys, you know, when Ron had to come down here and the other guy abandoned me up in northern New Mexico, and I was on a paper route for like a whole year. I had just me. I had some people that liked me and stuff. They visit, but they weren't like that. I had nobody could depend on, you know. Like I said, if I fell down in the middle of the room, broke my leg or something, I couldn't get up and I couldn't get to the phone, I would die there. Because I don't. If you know somebody, hey, where's Red? Yeah, he's dead. You know, you read in the newspaper, unattended death in the home. There he is, a skeleton laying in the middle of the room. Somebody, they noticed the snow's in there, something snowing in that building a little bit. What is it? Did that guy die? I haven't seen him in a while. What's going on? Your neighbor or something, you know? But this is all, also you got to realize, and I realize this too, even down till today, it gets easier. You go, in the beginning when you're coming in, you have a lot of penance to do. You committed a lot of sins in your life when you were outside the church, and you're not going to get off that easy. King David paid his whole, he was joyous and happy, ruled the kingdom of Israel, was really faithful and glorious and all these victories, but he was being punished until the day he died because of those particular sins he committed, which were really bad, adultery and murder. And so he had to pay his whole life for that. Do you think when God starts to punish you, he will ever stop? Great statement. But he always gives you the grace to withstand it. And he gives you grace on the grace. And he gives you the spiritual inner peace and wisdom that can't compare to anything. But it's got to come through trial and tribulation. I tell Matthew that one verse, Matthew 12:10.
It is Daniel 12:10.
Many shall be chosen and be made white, but they shall be tried by fire. But the wicked shall deal wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand. But the learned shall understand, the learned, the faith. The faith is what you base everything on. And then God gives you these enlightenments and these joys with the faith, with true wisdom. But just you think you're going to get out of it, of your past life? Or even if you're living a good life now, you paid all your penance for your past sins, you still got to do reparation for other people. You got to pray for other people. You got to do penance for other people. So you're still going to get persecuted. Although what happens is you become what we call battle-hardened. You become elite. You get used to it. Like St. Paul says, you learn. You know, that's what the scriptures here to help us. Persevere in patience. The patience of the saints will save you. Without patience, you can't be saved, or without perseverance. So I guess this is our lecture for today about, I gave you an example of, from my own, what I went through, and all these brothers here can tell you something similar about in their life, you know. It's like a lot of these people, even in these like I just said before, even in this pagan world, family members aren't happy with one another. Maybe a couple little bit days, but they're always fighting. They're always jealous. There's always envy. There's adultery. There's divorces. There's homos. There's transgender. All this stuff's going on in these families. But especially, this is good information I want to give to people. If you not to panic when you think you're going to be moving out right away, but just make your effort. When the time is right, God will get you to place. He'll move you. We have the guy in Brazil I'm helping right now, one of the brothers in Brazil, and he's got a nice little cell there. Perfect. That's that. I mean, when I came here, this town's really good for that, too. They have really small dwellings that are very inexpensive. It's gone up now since El Cid came in here, that bastard. Everything's going up now. You notice that? The rents and everything. That bastard, that filthy bastard came in and ruined this. Ron and I, when we used to go home on the Lord's Day, he would take me home because we'd drink our wine and he would drink his hard stuff, and we watched the movie, and I let him drive because it let him get arrested. DW, not me. So we weren't DW. We never got drunk. But just, you know how they are, breathing breath, blind man. So I said, Ron, you take the hit. That's why I have the brother, if any, because the devil loved to get me. But we'd be driving home through town. We say, this used to be a one-horse town. When you're going through the main street, it's like a bowling alley, you know? You could just roll a bowling ball down here, knock the pins down. It's wide open. Even now, it's not bad. But now it's probably a two-horse town. It's getting more popular, which we have no doubt. And Brother Ryan was telling us, a lot of people from New York are moving in. El Cid was the first one that moved in here about a couple months after we moved in. This George Soros kind of a guy. Liberal, filthy slob. You slob, you slob, you pagan, you heathen, you filthy, dirty, rotten bastard. And he moved all his lefty, liberal, faggot, homos, transgenders, and assorted freaks and Satanists into town. And we saw his progress in this town when we moved in. He was here to subvert us. The devil knows this. So there's a combat going on in this town. And now he's at his supreme power. He's on like the,
Chamber of Commerce.
He bought up all the real estate, by the way. That's how he came to power. He owns almost, he bought up all the real estate. Once you start owning real estate and you're paying taxes and he starts giving donations, he's buying out the whole town. No. This guy. So what else were we going to say in relation to that? So he's buying out the town.
Oh, raising the rents.
Huh?
He was raising the rent.
Raised the rent.
Oh, yeah.
There's another guy like Sid.
So then what Ryan was here, another guy like Sid, and Gordon Gekko was his name.
Right?
Then the Gekko's
on
the side.
He worked with Sid, but then I don't know the name of this other guy, but that he bought the golf course,
GTA. He's got guys coming from New York now moving in here, investing. They're getting ready for the combat. God's setting it up, you know? Pharaoh and Moses.
Yeah.
You think you're going to mess with me, man? What's up? Hey! Down, I'll put your nose right up into your skull. We can't wait for those things, right? But God's pumping their ass up. And I think maybe when the Chinese come in here, I'm going to just tell them, I'm going to say, Mr. Chinese, sir, thank you. What took you so long? Secondly, can I take one of your 50 caliber machine guns and let me have the honor to go through town? Because they don't like people like that either. I want to spray the town with the 50 cal when they're in there. Put a 50 cal in their ass, it'll tear them to pieces. In their head, it'll explode like a pumpkin.
Yeah.
But that's combat. But look at the problems. Look what Will had to go through in a political arena. So anytime you get out in that world, there's always a persecution and a conflict. But your home is your, really, we always say this to the brothers, and this is paradise. Mary's Little Ranch, my house is paradise. It's peaceful. It's so peaceful, I can't even explain. I go, the silence of God is in your own home. And when you finally do get your own place, even if it's your own apartment, I told that little cell, it's going to be a very holy place. As long as you're holy, God's going to protect you. It's going to be holy. And every now and then, you might have to put up. Every now and then, we had some pesky neighbors. But we would pray, and it would go away. And sometimes you have pesky neighbors because you're doing something wrong. You're letting somebody come in here that doesn't belong in here. And the devils are coming in because you're letting them come in. That's what we give all these advices about kicking out people and who are not right. Don't let them stay in here too long. If they stay in here too long and they're not right, they're going to bring their devils in, and all of a sudden people are going to come in, and your camp starts to get disrupted. We've had that happen here. But we've gotten better at it. We know how to kick people out quicker. And then when you finally do that, then there's no way the devil has an access to your place, and it becomes supremely peaceful. So is there any questions so far from any of the brothers online? All right, now, unless there's anything I can add to that, would be our lecture for today. We could get out of here a little bit early if we have to. It's not a big deal. You guys, but I got some more other stuff to say. I just want to make sure I finish off what I just said there so we can stop that. And unless there's anything else, I don't want to get into, I'll maybe next week we'll get into the trilogy, you know. New Jersey, Northern New Mexico, Corpus Christi, Texas, Southern New Mexico, TRC. But already to that, what was the other thing like when I was in? That was when I was first coming, right? Sacred Heart Cathedral. Okay, that was the. Okay, then it was Immaculate Conception with Father Dowdy. Then it was Father Paul Wickens in his American Legion Hall.
What about St. Lucy's?
Oh, Lucy's, yeah. It was Immaculate Conception. Then it was St. Lucy's. And then it was Father Wickens, American Legion Hall. Then it was a monastery down in Berlin, New Jersey. Then we were in New Jersey, then we went up to state New York, and all that mess happened. And from there, back to New Jersey again, in the rooming house. And then at that time, we're going to all these different... At the beginning, when I first came out, we're going to like these city Vicontist priests that we're hoping they're okay. And each one ends up being a humongous disappointment. Hey, we got this one O'Keefe up here, up in Glenmont, New York, and, you know... And then that didn't work. And so then we're all back saying, that's it, we're not looking anymore unless somebody, you know, comes around. And that's when he comes in, he's trying to tell me, Rich, don't you got nowhere to go? What a hypocrite. Where are you going? Well, you know what ended up happening to these two guys, by the way? When they did that to me, they went back to the SSP-10. And I heard either one or two of them, at least one of them, went back to the Vatican II Church. They went back. They were waiting all this time when I'm with them, like something's going to happen. You know, well, something was going to happen. I'm going to do my Strange Voices Part 1 and 2. How's that for a something? But the curse they were under, they went back into the SSP-10 and back into the Vatican II. And how many times this guy, Lou, would argue with his son was an SSP-10 priest. And he held the city of the composition, he held the dogma, he would argue with his priest's son, and his son got so upset about all this, he went to Africa, he had the SSP-10 transfer him to Africa, in a monastery where he can just practice the Gregorian chant. So he said, I just want to spend my whole life on the Gregorian chant. Well, that's nice. That's nice. Gregorian chant's nice. I like it too. But that ain't enough. It's our faith is more than just a Gregorian chant. Why do we pray? To get grace. Why do we get grace? To do things. To say things. To preach things. To go out and try to convert people. To condemn things. Not to hide like a coward. Because you don't want to confront it. Because you got sick of all these arguments. So instead of addressing the arguments, he became stupid. And denied everything. And this is the way we all grew up, really. None of us studied the faith. Because if we did, it would be dangerous. The minute you start studying the faith, you're going to have fights with the priest. There's going to be... flamethrowers going on. That's why you don't even want to talk about the faith in these churches. Go ahead. Talk about the faith in these churches. Your ass will be kicked out so quick. That's why the priest is always running from the parishioners. He's afraid of them. They're effeminate. They're cowards. They run. They hide. How many times? Literally run sometimes from me even. Because, you know, you would say, Father! 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 I should have kicked him in the ass. I'll put a bullet in your ass. I'll really have you running. That's how you got to stop him, right? Yeah. Wouldn't that be interesting? You go there with a gun, right? You don't shoot. You just shoot the floor. You know, you go like this. Hey, Father, Father, I got a question. He's running away. Ba-boom! Yeah. Stop or I'll shoot. I want to ask you some questions about the faith. Yeah. You know, you're a priest. You're supposed to teach us. You're not supposed to ask that. You're a layman. You're not a theologian. Laymen are not supposed to study the faith. You're supposed to say stupid. Yeah. Stupido. Yeah. Ignorance is bliss. Yeah. All right, so I think then we'll end this, and then we'll go into our announcements. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.